Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters, and it's still election night, November 2nd,
I mean, if you're watching this live, which I don't know who is, I guess you still have another, hour and a half to go out there and vote?
That's right. Polls close at 8 p.m.
You have to be registered, number one.
You have to have been registered several weeks, 20 days, I think, before election. Yeah. Maybe it was less this year. I know the state law was changing regarding the deadlines for registration, and maybe they'll change further in the future. Some people are promoting election day registration. I'm personally not all that enamored of the idea.
I have
a lot of sympathy for election workers, and if they have
just put more money in the budget, because I think that's an important, to have 20 days before. And
I think 20 days is excessive. Yeah, I absolutely don't think it needs to be 20 days. But the same day registration and voting, to me, I'll just leave it to say, I think that there are other logistical problems potentially with that.
I think it's worked in other places. I think Oregon has it.
Listen, I'm not going to lose sleep.
New Hampshire has it, I think.
Right. I'm not going to lose sleep if it happens.
No, but I haven't heard that I don't know.
You know, I think in places with a tremendous population turnover like Cambridge, it could become logistically more difficult than a much more steady as she goes community where, you know, somebody just moved in 5 days ago and they like to vote here. And then it's pretty easy to deal with that. I don't think it's as easy to deal with it in a place like Cambridge. But anyway, it's not a big issue, but you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's certainly true you had to be registered in order to vote this year. And they had, there were multiple ways to vote, as we just mentioned in the previous half hour, it's nobody made it difficult,
Right.
There's traditional absentee voting, there's no excuse or mail-in absentee voting, drop boxes. There was early voting.
Yeah, it's been a big change, and they never had it. I mean, Boston, it's the first time too that they had that for a city election.
And I think, unlike last year with the federal election, where voter turnout just jumped because of all the additional
mechanisms. Of course it did. It was like life or death,
But not just in Cambridge, but it does not appear to be the case that turnout is going to leap forward this year based on the availability of these other mechanisms for voting. It may go up, could go down, could be the same.
No, in fact, I think that if it's really costing a lot more to do all this and the turnout is really less, then maybe they shouldn't do it again.
Maybe people will rethink it a little bit. You don't necessarily need 5 days of early voting.
No.
I think the mail-in option may well be here to stay. It's up to the state legislature.
I like that one. I don't know if you need early voting, because I like the mail-in one because you get time to really look at it. You're not rushed. On the other hand, like you have pointed out, you can't correct it. In other words, if you go to the polls, they can actually see if you've not
Somebody who's sort of an advocate for ranked choice voting nationally contacted me today.
Based on a
statement, I get that a lot, but
excuse me,
people think ranked choice voting, Cambridge, elections.
It's a little different, but yeah.
Yeah, so I get a lot, but there's an issue, if you, because actually it happened to somebody right in front of me today when I voted, was somebody had incorrectly filled out their ballot.
Right.
And, put it through the scanner and then it kicked it out and it was like an error code. And then the election worker had to read the error code and say, well, apparently you did one of the following things, and based on the code, they can say you gave it the same rank for more than one candidate, in which case sometimes the voter says, what? Isn't that what I'm supposed to do? Yeah, so I say, well, maybe you should read the instructions next time before you vote.
I know, but I bet a lot of the new voters just said, okay, there's 15 people. I'm going to pick this one, this one, this one, and not do it ranked.
Right. Well, I've seen that when I look at ballot data. You'll see people will say, well, these are the ones I like a lot, 1-1-1-1-1. These are the ones I like a little less, 2-2-2-2-2. These are the ones I really don't like nearly as much, 3-3-3-3.
It
counts toward none of them.
I know.
Ambiguous choices have to be, you overlook them. You just go right past.
Will the election commission keep track of ballots that really were not and give us a count of how many really just didn't understand the process?
Is that a no thing? They won't do that. But I will, and then I will bring it to them because that's what I've done in the past.
Wait, you're allowed to see those ballots?
No. Well, not the ballots themselves, but I can see the ballot data.
Right? Okay. So I'll be curious about that.
We successfully lobbied, several of us, to change it so that things like overvotes, we call those vertical overvotes, where you give the same ranking to more than one candidate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some people do, they... I've seen ones where somebody gives a number one to somebody and they go, oh, no, I didn't mean to do that. So they cross it out.
Yeah.
Scanner doesn't know. That's just a mark, right?
That's right.
And then fills in a one for somebody else and then gives a number two to the candidate who originally began number one. Well, that ballot can't be counted for any of them because it sees ambiguity horizontally and vertically. Oh. Now, the scanner software is supposed to say, excuse me, voter, there's a problem here. And then the election worker knows what the machine's codes are and explains to the voter. And you have you can have up to three ballots. So if you screw up the first one, you still got another job. Screw it up again, but then you can't do it.
You get three chances? Is that what it is? You get three chances?
Rarely do you need to do that, but that's what the law allows. And so that's great if you're there and you can be alerted to the fact that you made an error. But if you mail in your ballot, there's no way to do it. Because nobody's looking at that ballot until election day at the polls when it's being scanned. And at that point, you're not available to say, excuse me, Mr. Winters, you've apparently fouled up. Would you like another ballot to try again? Can't do it. See? So, somebody asked me about that, sort of, well, what do you do? And I go, well, there's really not a lot you can do. It's the downside of mail-in absentee voting is that you don't really get to correct your errors.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean the ballot doesn't get necessarily counted.
Wait a minute. Unlike in-person voting, when you mail something in, they know who you are.
They know who they you could, are.
I've heard of instances where they actually contact you.
That's right. And now
I don't know about Cambridge, but I heard it happened.
So they could do that, right? But the thing is that each election's a little bit different in terms of what you can do. It was a big deal where in the presidential elections last year, under the COVID rules, they actually had to ask, is it okay for us to open up the envelopes before election day? Right. And they got the approval to take the folded ballots out of the envelopes and lay them flat. But they could not yet scan them. So if there was an error, it wouldn't be known until it got scanned.
Because that's different. Because the envelope is where the information is, not on the ballot.
Yes. Okay. Now, another option, if the Secretary of State permits it, is that you could be permitted to scan the, not only open up the envelopes and lay the ballots flat, but also pass them through, scan them, but not tabulate any votes. Because they don't want anybody seeing what the totals are because somebody is going to talk to the press, go, hey, guess what? So-and-so's got so-and-so. So they don't want anybody to have the capacity to do that. So, so there's different rules governing these things. But the main point here is that if you absolutely want to make sure that an error, if you do make an error, it gets caught, then vote on election day like I did, you know. But but for the most part, I have to say, because I look at the ballot data, I get it. There's actually relatively little voter error in Cambridge.
Good. Okay.
We are relevant. You know, now again, if you have a lot of new voters, it may be different.
I'd be really curious to see what it's going to be like this year, because I think we do have a lot of new voters.
And if they, there are, and the typical type of error you might have is somebody will believe that they can only vote for one candidate or something, which isn't true. Or they'll misunderstand how you're supposed to rank, or they'll feel that. Well, I mean, there's a lot of different misconceptions people could have, but you don't generally see too many of them.
Okay, wait a minute. Let me ask you something. If you're
most invalid ballots, by the way, are school committee ballots that are intentionally voted blank because somebody says, "I don't know anything about school committee."
I don't know anything about schools, right?
Yeah, and that's actually quite common.
Okay, if you're registered in another town in the state and you come here and you haven't, do you have to re-register or do you have to just change your address or what?
You
can
change
you still
your,
vote? What if you went to your neighborhood precinct and said, well, I was registered?
I believe it is right now is that if you were coming here from Somerset, Massachusetts, and you moved to Cambridge, but as of the registration deadline, you were still registered in Somerset, you would have to vote in Somerset.
You couldn't do a provisional ballot?
You could, and then the election commission would have to abide by state law.
Okay.
They can't just sort of make it up and go, well, she's okay, so I'll tell you, we'll let her through. You know, you have to be uniform about it.
Well, be provisional.
Well, the thing is,
check it out.
But then everybody could just say, oh, I'll just vote provisional.
Okay, you're right. Yeah.
You know, so I think that there are some cases where it was somebody just sort of didn't get it. You know, for example, if I lived in Ward 9, Precinct 3, and I moved to Ward 4, Precinct 1, and I went to vote there, and they said, you're not registered here. And then they told you, you got to go back to Ward 9 to vote there.
Yeah.
And they said, well, for a municipal election ballot, it wouldn't have really mattered ultimately. You know,
you mean they could have voted there?
No, they'll still tell you you're supposed to go back there, but but in the circumstances, let's just say somebody was of limited physical limitations,
right,
and you sort of say, well, there's no way I can do that, and it's also it's 7:30 at night, and polls close at 8, whatever, and they could allow somebody to vote provisionally, and then they would count it in, even though the vote was cast in Ward 4, would then be put into the Ward 9, Precinct 3 pile and would be tabulated with those. Not that it should make a difference, but that's how it would
be. I had that. I told you I was giving out compost bins or whatever. I was at the war school, and this guy came up with a dog, and I was saying, oh, I hope he doesn't. And he says, can I vote here? I live over in whatever. I said, no, I think you have to go. But it was 3:30 in the afternoon.
Right, he had time to fix it, yeah.
Yeah, but it's just like, it's interesting, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know
so that's typically where provisional voting would happen. By the way, this calendar of events here is that, in principle, we'll see about the practicalities.
Oh, why don't you show that? You describe that. You're talking about how the vote's going to get counted?
I don't really have something all queued up for doing that here, but what I'll just say is that so tonight, after 8 o'clock, as the 42 precincts come in with their little data cards and whatever,
and the big boxes, right? They come in with
the big boxes, presumably most of the early voting and even mail-in voting ballots would have been delivered to each of the 42 precincts. And they would have been scanned during the day, there's a lot of downtime. And so they just basically process ballots, put them through the scanner. So in principle, most of those will have been counted tonight. There will still be auxiliary ballots, which includes blank ballots. It includes blank ballots with write-ins on them. It may include a ballot where somebody violated one of the provisions, but insisted that I know exactly what I'm doing. And they go, okay. So those will be checked out.
What about
tomorrow.
When do they get them from the post office?
There may be some that are legally voted and they're postmarked by the right dates and they arrive.
Had to be postmarked today or yesterday?
They have to actually arrive today. I believe so. Yes. So that's why they were always telling people, make sure if you're going to do it that way, do it early. Right.
Right.
Now there were some that, for example, may have been voted at, because you could still vote up until 8 p.m. at one of the drop boxes, I believe.
Yes, and you can. I saw that.
So there's they're going to be taking those ballots and running them up to the polls.
No.
Right. You know, if it was, if it was dropped in a box in Inman Street in mid Cambridge, nobody's going to, but it was a voter from Ward 11, they're not going to drive up to North Cambridge with those. So those, I believe, would probably show up in the ballots to be counted tomorrow, but I'm not 100% sure of that. So, but the point is that the election isn't decided, that most people, at least if they finish tonight, they might not, but they may have to suspend it and then pick it up tomorrow morning. But usually you have a pretty good idea of the outcomes at the end of tonight. But it could change if it's very close with the additional auxiliary ballots. It could change tomorrow at the end of day. Mm-hmm. And even then, tonight is called preliminary. Okay. Tomorrow would be called the unofficial final count. But then the official count doesn't happen until 10 days after election day.
I was going to say, it's 10 days.
They have to allow for overseas absentee ballots, which we don't usually get very many of those in a municipal election.
Yeah.
You know, really just a handful, but you have to count them.
Yeah.
And they're also, they will adjudicate some of those provisional ballots on that same day, that Friday after this Friday. And then they'll run the computer tally one more time. And then that will be the final official count. Now, is that the end of the story? Yes. But if it's something that's really close, candidates could have there's a certain window of time where they could demand a recount. Then they have to gather some signatures to demand a recount. The Election Commission does not have to actually grant a recount, right? But as long as the margins are relatively thin, they generally will.
What if it's there have been those, right? I mean, there's been
had recounts in 2001. We had one, the closest one was a school committee race in 2001. But we've had recounts, I think, in 2009, 2013, city council.
But you can lose by, 14 votes? I mean, didn't Craig lose by?
I forget exactly. You know, you can have very close margins, and there have been some elections that were pretty close. Mm-hmm. For the most part, when they do a recount, it tends to only reinforce the original, give or take a ballot or two.
Yeah.
The wild card is that if there are candidates who have a surplus of ballots, because of the Cincinnati method that we use for surplus distribution, there's a chance that a different collection of surplus ballots could be the ones that are transferred.
That's true.
And they may transfer in somewhat different ways. So you could see a swing of a dozen votes or something in that case. But, you know, it would only make a difference in an extraordinarily close election anyway. So anyway, the long story short is that we'll probably have a pretty good idea by tonight, if they finish tonight. And then we'll have an even clearer notion by tomorrow. And the likelihood that anything changes at the 10-day, you know, overseas absentee ballot, a final official count, is that's extremely unlikely that that would change more than a ballot or two. Really.
Yeah.
So, you know, so anyway, that's to come. Yeah, you know, that's what
now,
we stand.
You wanted to talk about school committee?
Yeah, basically, but I wanted to say something here. There's not a lot to say. I mean, you know, we could look through all the candidates, but honestly, they're it's all sort of said and done now.
Yeah.
You know, and the voters have, you know, kind of doing what they're going to do. But I do want to mention a couple of things. I think maybe what I'd like to do is just first mention kind of quickly, just so people understand the scale of money that has come in. Never mind all the particulars here, but you know, so for example, Paul Toner has topped the mark in terms of the total, the total amount of money taken in, you know, followed by Quentin Zondervan, Mark McGovern. Wow. It's kind of interesting because—
Wow, Quentin made more than Mark?
That's well, one of the things I started adding was a new column for how much money they personally threw into the campaign.
Oh, well, that's different. Up. Yeah.
I only added that a couple of days ago. So,
That's important.
Zondervan may have brought in $64,000 of that, but $15,000 came from him.
Sure.
Perhaps more startling is Burhan Azim at $35,000, but $13,000 of that came from his own pockets.
Yeah.
you know, those justice candidates, right? Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's whatever.
Right. But, you know, there was certainly some controversy about like, where's the source of their money. So for example, if you were to focus on who's bringing in the most money from basically the great influencers, you know, people with real estate.
Yeah, but you know, real estate, so it's $10,000 and people are just quibbling about this stuff. I'm sorry.
I think it's the scale of it's the issue. For example, if you're a candidate like McGovern who pulled in over $20,000 from those interests, and that actually is larger than the entire campaign budgets of other candidates, I think that actually becomes a bit of an issue. Now,
he's a stronger candidate than some of those other ones. So he's more been around.
But there are other very strong candidates who took in no money from those sources too. It's a choice they make, and people
Because they have principles and they're living by their principles, which is fine. Is not trying to hide anything about
it. Also part of the campaign rhetoric too.
Yeah.
You know, for better or worse, you know,
God forbid you take anything. Meanwhile, rich friends probably have lots of interests stuff. Forget it.
Personally, I don't really take great issue with somebody taking money from some property owners. I do have some concerns about the scale of it. That I will acknowledge.
I just don't see it out of control like that. I'm looking at what's going on nationally, globally, and I see $10,000.
It has been far worse in years past. I will simply say that. By the way, the one little piece of information that I only just got today. I was mainly focusing on city council because you don't even see because you basically only get eight days before the election. Do you ever see the reports from school committee candidates? And I was actually,
Why don't you see it? Because
it's not a depository account required. You don't have to, the banks don't have to report it. So you just have to do it at the end of the year and 8 days before the election. I don't have it. I just have it in front of me on a piece of paper, but I was quite stunned. I mean, a very high number for a school committee campaign raise and spend would be 20,000 or so.
Yes.
You know, that's sort of at the high end.
Right. Yeah.
You know, unlike, which is a lot less than city council campaigns, but one new school committee candidate, Akriti Bambri, pulled in almost $66,000, which dwarfs most of the city council campaign.
That's crazy. That's a combined budget of probably all the rest of them.
Has already spent over $32,000, which dwarfs every other school committee budget I've ever seen. And this doesn't account, this doesn't even include the late mailings and things that will only show up at the end of year.
Oh, I've gotten at least two mailings from her.
So, I mean, my Lord, and again, I'm not passing judgment here, but I have to just say, I was, as a person who follows campaign finance stuff, I was pretty stunned by that.
When I walked over, to do my thing at the Morse for the recycling or compost, there were two people there holding her signs. I believe they were her signs. Yeah. Or at least one. And then they left. But so she's everywhere, I guess.
Yeah. By the way, I'm just going to do one other quick share screen here. One of the things that I got around to doing just a couple of days ago was, you know, I do maintain this sort of index of all candidates who've ever run, and I'm not going to run into it here, but you'll notice that I added all the candidates for this year's election in here now. They don't have a number of number one votes yet because we don't know what those will be, but I will update these once the election results are known. So now you're at least officially on the list if you were a candidate on the ballot.
So what is the figure on the far right? That's the
number one votes. The number one votes that the candidate would have gotten here. So this has been on my website for years, and it has a few other, who was elected, people who then left for whatever reason, either death or conviction or whatever, you know. So anyway, I only wanted to make the point that I'm, kind of getting myself ready to get everything, all the results. One other thing that we do at the end of every election is I also will put together how would you call it? It was basically the blow by blow, round by round description of each of the elections. So it's one thing, and most people just want to know who the winners are. And I'll put those up, and I'm sure a lot of other people will put that information out. There's always sort of a pointless race to see who gets it out there. I don't think that's a value. Yeah. The one thing I try to do is to give the complete list of how many votes. What were their surplus? How did the surpluses transfer?
I like that. Yeah, the transfer stuff. Yeah. Very interesting.
Those of us who've sort of watched this for the years are much more interested in the detailed report which were the really close margins in terms of people deciding whether to seek recounts, which I hope doesn't happen, but there could be close races here.
Could be.
You know, maybe I'll just say one other last thing. This is a very, very strange year in terms of the politics of it all, because you have a situation where there's sort of you know, the ABC grouping of candidates, or which are primarily about densification of housing. But then they were not beloved, apparently, by the Residents Alliance.
No, the Cambridge Residents Alliance has some different,
and there's almost no intersection between them. Right. And they're, but they're very, they're almost the same as the Our Revolution group. So they seem
Cambridge Residents Alliance was?
It's six or seven, yeah. So they have seven, Revolution has six. Oh. The only difference is Patty Nolan, who the revolutionaries refused to endorse because she was
Palestinian,
she didn't support the boycott resolution about HP. You know, so she stood her ground on that one.
The more endorsements people got, the less
I, you know, there were some of these organizations were saying, just look at our people, that's it. And I'm sitting there doing battle with all of these slates saying, screw the slates, look at the candidates, do your homework. You're a voter, your responsibility as a voter.
But that's how they get the twos and the threes.
I feel like I'm doing battle with these slates who are basically trying to, you know, just, vote based on some sort of nonsensical ideological purity.
Well, for some of these new voters that don't follow all the stuff like you do, or even like I do, they're going to hold it.
I acknowledge that right away is that it's difficult to be a voter sometimes, especially if you're relatively new, you seek advice.
Right, because you want to do your civic duty, but you still don't.
A lot of people seek advice from friends.
Yeah,
you know, I think that's probably some of the best advice you can get. But other ones will
depends on who your friends are.
Exactly. You know, but you know, people are trying to characterize. Well, this slate, they're that the bad guys. No, these are the good guys. Whatever. Yeah. Honestly, it's all crap. But we'll see. You'll see. You know, just how many of these groupings exist and persist beyond the election. Honestly, we could use a real civic association in this city, and we don't.
All right. Well, we have just less than a half a minute, so let's wish the best for everybody. Let's wish the best for our city.
That's right.
And lots of stuff going on in the country, elections, Virginia, all that. So I'm going to be tuned
May in. Peace and love reign in the People's Republic.
Yeah, right. We still have 10 seconds. So peace, reign, and health. We got to have health.
Get vaccinated. Good beer. Yeah, and good beer.
Okay. All right. That's it. Bye-bye.